Before getting into the intro of this episode, I just want to give a quick shout out to AR_SML_2 as well as LionBuzz17 for helping me with my new intro music. Just trying it out for size here, but just wanted to shout out to them and say thanks for helping me and volunteering your skills for the Lala Beams podcast. Welcome to Lala Beams. This is episode 18. This is your host, Lala, and I'm sitting here with Roan, who is the host from Steak for Breakfast podcast. Is it steak or steaks?
Singular. That's our pronoun is steak.
I know. And also my friend who is probably my favorite person to exchange memes with. So that's saying something. How are you?
Oh, thank you. I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate you letting me come on.
I'm excited too. I only asked you about the steak for steaks because I know it's a little pet peeve. So I wanted to give you the opportunity to let the people know.
You know, it's good that you're going to let me clear the air, because first of all, I'm one of a triad of hosts. Noah and Nick are both our co-hosts on the show. And yeah, the plural sense of our name just kind of snowballed, I guess, when we were just starting and starting to reach out. I don't want to say beg, but beg people to come on our show. Everybody would always refer to us as steaks as like our name, like in texts and in messages on social media. They would just, instead of saying like Roan or Nick or Noah, they would just put steaks. And We the People Radio still swears. It's like that. What is it? The Streisand effect?
Mandala.
You've always heard steaks, but it's steak for breakfast. And every show we've been on, We the People, My Maria, Russian Disinformation, Kill the Mockingbirds. And then everyone who comes on who's like one of our guests always refer to it as, wow, steaks for breakfast. Steaks for breakfast are good and delicious. And I don't ever want to correct them because I feel like they'll get butthurt.
Yeah. I've only ever eaten one steak for breakfast, never multiples.
Okay. Was it delicious? I could tell you our show is delicious.
It is. So for some of the people who haven't listened to your show, how would you describe it?
You know, it kind of started off as something that was just right below the word mainstream, covering conservative libertarian politics. Like a lot of facts, a lot of numbers, breaking it down, audio clips. And then as kind of the show went on, there's so much other stuff in our community when you get into all of the people who follow the same kind of politics that are into Q, that are into all of like the, star seeds, truth seekers, energy beers, and even the flat earthers and stuff like that. It kind of morphed into like what it is today. And that's pretty much, if you are pro America and aren't retarded, we sure, happy to have you on. And for the record, even though our show kind of goes down the road of like a singular narrative, every single person that we've asked to come on who is not necessarily along those lines flakes, because I just think they're intimidated because there's three of us and we all do our research and we all do our homework and we're kind of up to our knees in the actual front lines when it comes down to it, when we're breaking the LARPs in our real life. And I think that's one of the reasons we haven't had anybody on to argue with us yet.
Yeah, that would really be a good show. And that's kind of the thing is with your show, I listen to it and I feel like I'm getting informed on the current events and the politics of the week. And you just do a really good job of kind of getting your facts straight. And we need that. That's the truth, because the mainstream media isn't doing it. Even Fox, they're not covering it the way that you guys are. And it also is just fun to listen to you guys.
Yeah, God rest their souls. We try to make it funny. And if politics is something you've always had a hard time with, you'll get a sprinkling of all that other stuff I just talked about, and it'll be really funny. You'll definitely laugh the whole time.
I feel like I've never liked politics. I've actually always hated it. And it's bigger than that now, which is why it's so important. And the people who are using that as an excuse, I don't like politics, it's boring, or it's too fucking late for that. Like, stand up with us because we're losing our country right now. and it's infuriating.
Yeah, I really like that point you made. And I think it's a combination of a couple things that have happened over the last maybe 100 years that have really allowed all the people who are in control to play their hands. I think one of the biggest things is, obviously, we can all agree, is technology. Before there was internet, before there was cell phone, satellites, drones, and all that other stuff, cable, pretty much got localized news, that mockingbirded effect of what everybody wanted you to hear. Based on your region, where you are in the country, you got one really oldly statesman presidential person every night or on the weekend, whether it be somebody like Peter Jennings or Dan Rather, you know, putting like a family spin on it. And life just kind of carried on. I think with the development of all the technology we've had over the last 100 years, in addition to the fact that they're major leaguedly playing their hand, trying to bring everybody into that one world kumbaya government of gulag, it's kind of allowed everybody who has the opportunity to sit down and do the research to kind of go out and see what the big picture is going on here, and tie a lot of those deep, dark entities together who are pulling some of the strings.
To your point about having kind of a devil's advocate episode, I've had liberals turned truther, because I don't even think it's liberals turn Republican. It's a truther movement. It's not about your political affiliation.
Exactly.
But I was telling you too that I'm trying to find someone who survived a cult. And it kind of sucks, because when I reach out to them, they mostly always have the pronouns in their profile. So they probably go to my page and were like, yeah, that's a no from me, dog. But also, it plays into the whole idea of liberalism being a mental illness, because you have to think that if someone is a cult survivor, they have to have some like lasting scars that could attribute to a type of mental illness, and they would be attracted to the liberalism. And that's my theory.
No, I agree with you there. It's just, imagine if you are like just a role player, if you're like the NPC version of a cult, you're not David Koresh, but you're more of a Branch Davidian. You kind of don't have a role even as a human. You're just pretty much a cog in that little community, and you're almost viewed as a part of piece of property that makes that whole community work. So probably disassociating yourself with that and getting back out into the real world, and all of the opportunity to be like a God tier Karen, I can only imagine how entitled someone would be to want everybody else to listen to what they have to say.
Right. Well, before we get this going, I wanted to ask a couple questions of you to go along with your whole steaks for breakfast.
And there it is again.
You know that was on purpose. I do it on purpose.
I actually don't mind. No, I know.
Okay. So what is your favorite breakfast food?
My favorite breakfast food has to be eggs.
How do you like your eggs?
If I'm in the opportunity for it, I'll go omelet. But if not, I could go scrambled with cheese.
Do you put ketchup on your eggs or no?
Hot sauce.
No ketchup.
Nah. I mean, if it's there, I might do a little dippage if it's there for something else, like some potatoes. But if I was just going straight eggs, no ketchup.
How about avocado toast?
Love it.
Do people in California eat grits?
Only the ones who aren't from there, which is an overwhelmingly large majority of the state.
I had such a hard time finding grits when I lived in Boston. No one served them.
Like, if you know how everybody from Florida is pretty much from the Northeast? Well, it's kind of like everybody from California is from like the Midwest. That's right. Kind of like that out here. So, yeah, you only find the places that have foods that are regional to the United States are always very popular, and the food is extremely good. That's like breakfast stuff, pizza stuff, even just Italian food in general, because there's like not a lot of Italians on the West Coast out here.
Did you hear the murmurings of Caitlyn Jenner eyeing governor job?
Unfortunately, I did.
What do you have to say about that?
If this was my show, we'd play the audio clip of It's Ma'am.
Excuse me, it is ma'am. Ma'am, once again, ma'am.
I said both of you.
No, you said sir. Once again, it's ma'am.
I actually said both of you guys. It was general.
Right beforehand, you fucking said sir.
Sir?
Okay. Motherfucker, take it outside. If you want to call me sir again, I will show you a fucking sir.
I apologize.
Motherfucker.
I apologize now.
Um, And besides that, I don't know. I really think that because honestly, because the recall was able to happen and they overwhelmingly met the threshold and exceeded it to recall Gavin Newsom.
Is that official?
Yeah, they got close to 2.2 million and they're like in the signature verification part of it right now, but they were like it got past like the number you need officially to not for it to count. So they were like close to 90% and they still had like 500,000 or 600,000 votes to go to. But I just think California is tired of that. I mean, I think like even though the mainstream media keeps trying to pump that narrative, people are just getting exhausted with it. I even saw an article. It was actually a segment on CNN. It was a day or two ago. I read it online and it just basically said that people who live in like these major cities, Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, Atlanta, are just absolutely tired of the lawlessness, the gangs, the mobs, the violence, you know, the public beatings for no reason, people getting pulled out of cars. And I was surprised to see them kind of, but then I start to remember if you're just looking at it from a normie Republican Democrat political sense of it, they need to start shifting the narrative to the 2022 midterms. So now it's time to make the Democrats look good, like they're stopping all this stuff and solving all these problems, even though they're not. But, you know, people are just tired of it. And I think something like Big Bruce, as we like to call her, it's just not going to play out here. I really think the next governor of California is going to be Republican. And hopefully it's one that can just continue to roll for a little bit.
Is there anyone out there speaking out in that regard as a Republican?
There's a couple. The former mayor of San Diego, his name is Kevin Falconer. He's already put his name in the hat. He is pro-balanced budget, pro-closed borders, anti-crime, pro-police, low taxes, pro-military, because we're a pretty big military town down here in San Diego where I'm at. Major Williams, he's kind of from like the central Fresno-ish area. He caters to also the military and a lot of the pro-Trump agenda stuff. But if you really just want to go literally pro-Trump agenda, you got Big Dick Rick Grinnell, who was most recently known as being a high-ranking advisor to the Trump administration. In addition, he was an ambassador to Germany, I believe. And he has all of those things that line up with Trump philosophy wise, in addition to being gay, which caters directly to the state of California more than I think other states.
You know, it doesn't matter. Once you're Republican, you're no longer get that gay card anymore.
That is true.
And also, if they don't fix the election system, it doesn't fucking matter. Caitlyn Jenner's already your governor. So
that's terrible, because you want to know why? According to the head of election integrity, this is the safest and most secure election in the history of the world. So how dare you?
They keep saying it over and over and over again. And then finally, after the 800th time of hearing it, I believe it now. So they changed my mind.
Well, yeah, that Time magazine article pretty much said it all. It just played their entire hand. And you've already noticed a lot of those things that the Time magazine article outlined, like states like Atlanta or states like Georgia have already, you know, changed their election laws for the next time just to make sure that stuff like that doesn't happen, which is funny. I'll bring it up real quick. We had a debate on our show yesterday, right at the beginning. And I read them how you heard what happened with Major League Baseball, how they moved their all-star game from Georgia to Colorado, right?
Yes.
So they moved it from a state with stricter voter laws, with less early voting, no drop boxes, and you need an ID, and also from a state that goes from about high 40% African-American or white people to Colorado, where it's over 80% white. Like, it literally makes no sense why they moved it there, unless it's just for the fact that there's like smoking in public. And I think that's literally the only thing that's different. But when it comes to all the voter laws and rules that are already set up, Colorado is way stricter than Georgia. But no one could guess the reason why everybody's making such a big stink about Georgia and changing those election laws. Do you have any idea what the difference is between Colorado and Georgia and why everybody's making such a big deal on the left for those laws getting changed?
Maybe because the population has more Black people.
That's a pretty good one, but I don't think that's exactly what they're seeing. My opinion on it is that Georgia did not go blue in this last election.
Well, obviously, but that's why they're making it a racial thing.
Right. But the thing is, like, a place like Colorado will never go red. Like, if Colorado ever went Republican, they would be saying the same thing about that election as they did in this one, but just opposite. So I think it's funny that they're making, like, their last stand in Georgia, because then it kind of narrows it down to you only have, like, Philadelphia, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Arizona. And Arizona's cleaning themselves up, too, with all the stuff they got going on down there between the Dominion forensic recount that's happening right now and all the laws they've already changed, like they did in Georgia, to kind of just say that this stuff's never going to happen again. So now you're narrowing it down to states that they're either 100% red or 100% blue. You're now eliminating the amount of purple states, and at the same time narrowing it down to where there can be a bigger set of eyes on places like Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania next election to be able to call out that stuff that really happened. So I think, like, the more states, the merrier for the left. And I think by adding Georgia to the mix this time, they really thought, like, fuck yeah, this is going to be like just another state that has been red for the last 150 years, but now it's always going to be purple because we made it blue once. And now that they changed those laws back and put a whole bunch of new restrictions on them, I think it's going to be a lot harder for them to pull off something like they did this time with the 80 million votes.
I don't focus on that too much just because it infuriates me. And I remember...
Do you think elections are a psyop or what?
Well, I've always voted, and I voted for Obama.
Okay.
I hate to say that, you know, but I think that
a lot of... I look at it this way. Would you say something like that? We hear it all the time on our show. They're like, people either say, like, I voted for Trump the first time in this election, or I voted for Obama twice, and they say it, like, shamefully.
Well, it's not, I don't have any shame in it, but I feel like I was also a victim of what they do, you know, and I was 18 or whatever, close to 18 the first time I voted for him. So you don't know shit about fuck when you're voting at that age, and they don't even try to teach you anything about it.
No.
And obviously he was pandering, like they always do, to the young people, to the minorities. Change, change, change. So I have no shame in it. It is what it is. But I still didn't give a fuck about politics. And when Trump came, I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. You know, shake things up a little bit. You can tell, you know, from being my friend and listening to my show that I kind of have that in my personality where I kind of just say shit to see like what happens, like stir the pot a little bit.
Sure.
Like, so I always thought he was fucking hilarious. Even before all of the good policies that he put in place, I was like, well, he's just very entertaining. And I just love the fact that he's politically incorrect. That was my favorite thing about him. And the fucking snowflakes, for the lack of a better word, it's just, there's nothing really to say. It's just like, you can't be funny anymore. No one can be funny anymore. It's almost illegal.
Everything is offensive. But here's the thing. And I agree with a lot of you just said with people being young and naive and getting kind of caught up in the movement and this, that, and the other thing. But I mean, when I bring what I have to the table is, yes, I voted for Donald Trump in two elections straight. But before that, how bad does it sound to say that I voted for Mitt Romney and John McCain?
I think that because it could be worse. I don't know.
No, I think that's almost more cringeworthy than saying I voted for Obama. Even the first time, like, even though I voted for John McCain in the election when Obama ran the first time, it was my dad that was like telling me I had to do that because this guy's going to be crazy and come in here and turn it into, like, you know, all communism and stuff. But I would see him on TV, you know, with his elbow up on the podium and his white, you know, Oxford shirt sleeves rolled up and his tie undone, just kind of being all charismatic. And as someone who was considerably younger the first time Obama run, I was kind of caught up in it a little bit too. And then, you know, he had crowds that were never as big as Trump's. Let's just get that straight.
Probably paid for by George Soros.
Right, exactly. But they were considerably larger than crowds that you had seen historically when people basically ran for public office. You would only see stuff like that at, like, the conventions or you know, really getting close to the election, and they were going back to like their hometown stronghold to hold those last couple of rallies. But Donald Trump kind of broke the glass ceiling on, didn't matter where he went, even if it was like super liberal state or, you know, city, he would still have massive numbers there.
What do you think about his Easter message? Should I just read it out loud?
Yeah, go ahead and read the whole, I mean, we kind of covered it yesterday, but I'd like to hear it again.
Well, you know, I wasn't there yesterday.
You are going to be there in a few weeks, though. I don't know if you want to start teasing that already.
Teaser, I will be on steaks for breakfast here in a couple weeks. I mean, steak. Anyways, statement by Donald J. Trump, 45th President of the United States of America. Happy Easter to all, including the radical left crazies who rigged our presidential election and want to destroy our country.
Yeah, that was right up there with the haters and losers.
That's the exact thing I thought. I posted that on my personal page on New Year's. I don't even go on my personal Instagram anymore. I get so mad.
For me, it's Facebook. I open up Facebook and I'll scroll like one or two finger swipes and I'm just like, and I'm done. Let's go back to where tell me how there's kids in containers. Tell me how, you know, the Vatican is in control. Tell me how like the Jews have been doing bad stuff since the dawn of time. I need to go back to my not personal account. We always say, if you're not doing the research or educating yourself, if you're just listening to what other people tell you, you're never going to figure it out. And if you think you like are awake and it's only because you like heart or laugh react someone's memes, or you just read like the title of like, if you see Project Mockingbird or, you know, Operation Northwoods, and you're like, oh yeah, I know about that. And don't do any research on it for yourself, then you're never going to really be informed onto how you can help towards a viable solution and not just be part of like the opposite of the left.
That's part of our movement as well, because I know that I was inspired by other podcasts that I listened to and hearing and taking the information and thinking to myself, why can't I do that? Why can't I talk about this or that? And I know that I've also done the same for others, because people have come to me and said, I want to start a podcast, like, can you help and stuff like that. And that was just me, I mean, what, 2-3 months ago now?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I remember exactly when I listened to your podcast for the first time, and the audio wasn't great. And it was kind of there was a lot of breaky uppies in there with you and Chonky Keck, but the content was good. And that's what I always tell people about our show. Like, you may think we're just kind of giving you some politics or like, you know, a truth or item of the week, or we're going to have on a guest that you want to hear. But for you as someone who's listened to our show, there's guests that we've brought on who 100% don't feed into our narrative at all. But by the end of the show, we're all talking about kind of the same thing. And it's not necessarily what they bring to the table. I mean, I still take a lot of credit for getting, you know, Maria from the My Maria show to talk about politics, and Dave Weiss, Flat Earth Dave, to talk about COVID for like a half hour. And when he's supposed to come on and talk about Flat Earth. And it's the content and the way you kind of serve it to your audience that hopefully keeps them coming back.
I agree. Another message actually from Donald Trump that was actually a topic I wanted to discuss with you is
my favorite.
He mentioned Matt Gaetz today. Did you see that?
He did. Sure did. That was one of the first alerts I had on my phone when I woke up today. So we had Tom Papert on, who's on InfoWars and is the editor-in-chief of the National File, I think a week or two ago. Long story short, back in 2015, he started the largest Trump Facebook page in the history of the world. It got up to a point to where, I don't know how many members were in there, but he said that the outreach could get to 9 million a day worldwide. And Facebook shut that page down like a week before the 2020 election, reinstated it, and then shut it down again 3 days before Stop the Steal. Because it got to the point to where the memes start shaping the news narrative instead of the narrative that the news is trying to give you. Because you know, all it does is take one spicy meme, whether it's like Jason Momoa behind Steve Cavill on the red carpet, and then like Steve Cavill's Parmesan, or Hunter Biden and Jason Momoa's Parmesan cheese. It's like a meme like that that just kind of totally takes away from the whole fact that he did a, you know, 60 minute show last weekend. The only thing everybody's making fun of is like Parmesan cheese. So I think from that group, I always get like meme notifications, like so-and-so posted. There's like a, you know, smaller satellite group of the one that got nuked. And there's usually like a screenshot of anything Donald Trump tweeted, posted in that group on Facebook. And that's like the first place I check.
Okay. So what it said was, Congressman Matt Gaetz has never asked me for a pardon. It must also be remembered that he has totally denied the accusations against him. There was something, I don't remember, I don't know if you do, where I think maybe some mainstream media site said that he asked for a pardon, like a non-blanket pardon. Was that it?
Of course it was our history reshapers and friends down at the New York Times that originally broke that narrative and used language that's pretty much only found online and in the truther movement, which is blanket pardons. And that's something that a lot of truthers have stated the Obama administration gave themselves, right, and, you know, tucked away in his national library, because I think they wanted to, you know, they kind of like reverse throw us crumbs too and give us, you know, they kind of restart the narrative going in the opposite direction when they throw things out that they know will trigger us, like blanket pardons. I mean, the only time I've ever heard it, and it's on several of the big truthers out there, is in reference to that. Right. And I think when they posted that narrative, they wanted to like trigger the whole conservative side of the movement.
What do you think about that? Like, do you think he's innocent or guilty?
Well, I look at it this way. Like, Donald Trump bends the narrative all the time to better serve himself. But I really can't find times over the course of his presidency when he straight up lied. Like, I know saying the wall is going to be this much higher and Mexico is going to pay for it was something that they kind of tried to ding him on the entire time. But I know for a fact, Mexico has paid for a portion of that wall that got built. Maybe not as much as Donald Trump would have originally wanted to be, but it happened. And there's stuff in place down the road where they're going to pay for even more of it once it keeps getting built. But it wasn't like they were going to pay the billions and billions of dollars up front, like in a check to pay for it. But I can't really figure out, like, or remember, I don't know if you can fact check me, when has he said something and someone's just come out and said, that's an absolute lie? I mean, they said things that he said are lying, like the kids in cages. He didn't build them. They accused him of it. Keeping kids in them, he got them out of them. You know, pretty much anything. So when he says that Matt Gaetz didn't ask him for that, I kind of want to believe him just based off face value.
Right. And when you put it that way, it's like, okay, let's say that he didn't ask for a blanket pardon. That doesn't necessarily say that he is guilty or not, but at the same time, he went on to say he also denied all of these accusations. To me, it's like, I have a hunch that he's, you know, probably sleazy, like used his power in a way to like get girls, whatever. If he slept with a 17-year-old, like, I do think that he should get charged or face the penalties for that. But at the same time, what about motherfucking party tits over here? Like, did everyone forget about him and all of his sexual fucking shit and killing your grandma and grandpas? It's so, and to me, it's like, it's a distraction. I've been seeing all of these, Matt Gaetz is a Freemason, Freemason handshakes, you know, and you see the same thing with Donald Trump is a Freemason or a Jesuit or all that. You hear that from time to time. Do you have, like, what does your intuition tell you? Because for me, I feel in this movement, in this truther movement, I have to consider all possibilities, but it kind of goes like this for me. It's like, okay, yeah, there is a possibility that Trump is just a puppet the same way. And that right. He's causing this divide and conquer, and he's just playing his part. But I also think that if that's the case, that we're completely fucked and that there is no good guy, and that you then have to go on to say that literally every single person backing him is also a bad guy. And like, there's literally no good people up in the higher ups. Is that a possibility? Sure. But what's your take?
I mean, the thing with Donald Trump was I really did believe and still do believe that he was the exception to the rule And I think I'm a little bit more biased towards it because I grew up in the Northeast. I'm originally from New Jersey. And it's like I've said on my show dozens of times, you grew up during the time that I did, which is when Donald Trump was getting into the heyday of his wealth, of his fame, books, TV shows. And really just as like a male romanticizing with that. He was everything that Chad was, the cool cars, the hot girlfriends, the big money. He was always at the parties. Then when you start to break down, is he like really different from anybody else? You get into like the Jesuit, the Freemason, or anything else that they've accused him of being a part of. Where do you see it in regards to the people he hangs out with? Like back in the day, he hung out with all the people, you know, more who are on the crazy liberal left side, like Al Sharpton, you know, Hillary Clinton and things of that nature. But when they tried to tie him to things like Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell and things like that, the only time you ever see them together is like at a party where there's like a million other celebrities. And is that an event? Is it like his personal like birthday party? Like there's never any facts. And I think that if it was for things more personal than those bad people, or, you know, I'm air quoting bad people because we know they're only like the facial fronts of what's really going on behind the scenes. He never really has. You don't see pictures of him golfing with Jeffrey Epstein. You know, you don't see pictures of him like on his yacht with Ghislaine Maxwell and people like that. You see him, you know, just kind of hang out with them in a public context. And then when you look into over the course of Donald Trump's career, the fact that he was never allowed in any of these big boy clubs who are supposedly ran by, you know, the Freemasons, Skull and Bones, or controlled by the Jews, refacing the New York waterfront. He got denied out of that. Owning a professional sports team, he got denied out of that. Having an actual casino in Vegas, he got denied out of that. If he was in all of these exclusive, like, good old boy clubs, wouldn't he have just been kind of that person who was allowed to put his face on all of these things instead of the person that had to work to keep his name on the building in front of them? You know, and that kind of is like part of that. It looks a certain way, but you have to do your own research and really educate yourself. And then you look at the narrative. Donald Trump's political party, I would say what it is today and what it was always, has flipped back and forth over the years. But if you watch his, you know, interviews with Oprah, the time he's gone on 60 Minutes, and go through the narratives of all of his books, which I believe there's four or five of them, he says the same thing from the beginning up to when he was elected president. So regardless of what party he's affiliated with, the narrative's been the same. America's getting screwed. There's no America first. They're violating the Constitution more and more. Social justice is destroying everything. And other countries are dictating the way that we make our wealth, maintain our wealth, and hold our presence in the world. That narrative from him has never changed.
There was even something that just popped in my head when you were saying that. There was someone who stabbed like a woman to death, I believe, in Central Park, and he paid money out of his pocket to put like a full page ad saying like something to the effect of fuck criminals like this. And like, we need the same thing that you were kind of going on with the social justice bullshit and like harsh penalties and all of this. And he's always had the same stance his entire time. And the pictures that you speak of, when I visit websites like this where they try to say that he's evil, yeah, of course he has pictures with Bill Clinton and Ghislaine and Jeff Epstein and all that, but they're always so old. And yeah, there's just a few of them.
Hillary Clinton was the governor of his fucking state. Donald Trump was a billionaire. Where do you think the money to run your campaigns is going to come from? Asking poor people for it? That's only what they do on the outside. They don't give a shit about the poor people votes. They want Donald Trump's money so they have the cushiest campaign possible. You know, it's just, you'll never be able to find like real in-depth. He just hasn't had relationships with these people. He was really like someone who, now remind you, I think he's been married 3 times and he has a whole bunch of kids from different wives, but he kind of just is like an introvert, even though he's a billionaire.
He doesn't drink. He likes to like
walk out. No. Because of what happened to his brother. He doesn't do drugs. He likes to be in the spotlight, but I also think he's the kind of person that as soon as he gets on the other side of the door and it closes, he breathes in a paper bag. And you could tell sometimes that he's kind of like cracking a little bit when he's really under the spotlight. Like, he's just one of those people, like, I think he enjoys not being friends with all these famous people and just, like, maybe knowing them or, like, taking pictures next to him. Like, even though he's a billionaire, I still think he's like, oh, yeah, it's cool that I'm taking pictures next to Hillary Clinton because she's famous.
Well, he was in their circles. He was rubbing elbows with them. That was,
yeah,
that's just where he found himself. I mean, I would never find myself there because I'm not a fucking billionaire. Like you said, these are the people that hate him today that have plenty of pictures with him from back in the day, including, you know, Oprah and a shit ton of celebrities. I just think the whole Hollywood part of it is really interesting. But then on the same thought, I think about, okay, yeah, he had 5 books and he always said that. And just playing devil's advocate, even the topic that we talked about on your show with the time traveling thing, I'm like, was this book really published back then? Or is it part of like this storyline where they want us to think that it actually was published back then, but it's actually published in 2019, right before all of this came out? So I really do like consider all of that.
You've got a good point there because, I mean, I'm a little bit older than you. I'm in my 40s and I used to be a lot more of a reader in my younger days than I am now, just because of the way the internet's set up. Like if I want to read something, I'll read a 200 page article, but I won't go buy a book. It's just the way I am right now because I don't have time to sit down with working 6 days a week, doing the podcast, having a family. It just doesn't work anymore. But I think I've never been able to find somebody who is older than me that knows of those books. Maybe it's part of what we touched on, like right at the beginning of the show, where technology didn't allow all of these gaps in the information to be met up like 30, 40 years ago. But did those books really just come out with like an 1890s date on them, even though they were published in like maybe 1990 or 2009?
Well, one of the things that I kind of skimmed over, I do read some books, but I kind of go through phases where I'll read every day and then I won't. And then I have to start the book over if I don't finish it. Right now I'm reading You Are a Spiritual Being.
No, You're a Spiritual Being.
Living in a Human Body or something like that. And it's so good. And one of the passages that I keep thinking about, it keeps coming up in my mind, was all about possibilities, right?
Okay.
And it goes in to talk about all the possibilities and how someone who's really spiritual awakened kind of doesn't think of this world made up of facts. So like you think about World War II ended in 1945, like that's a historical fact, supposedly, right? And someone who's more awakened thinks about all of the possibilities. So even something that seems concrete, World War II ending in 1945, people like you and I and people in the truther movement in general, we think about all of the possibilities, which is kind of what we're talking about now and what I will continue to do. And that's why, you know, I do find a lot of the Q things, like the drops, all of the decodes, interesting. And I think that some of the people who break them down are stretching a little bit at times.
Those Instagram posts give me anxiety. Like seven screenshots with in one picture with like 6 different color arrows all crossing each other. I need a paper bag to breathe in when I start looking at those.
I'm also like, okay, so I was thinking about this article from Washington Post about the QAnon's, QAnon's unexpected roots in New Age spirituality. And it talks about how QAnon is merging with New Age ideologies and anti-vax and all of this renewed spiritual movements that are happening. And in a negative way. And I hate the term New Age. I just think when I hear that, I think about the girls who I made that meme about that one time with like the elephant pants and like, they're like Angie, can you take this picture of me while I pretend to meditate, like by the water?
Right. Oh, look, I climbed to the top of a small mountain. Let me like put my arms up in the air with the sun just hitting me perfect and tell everybody how, you know, I'm a bad bitch and no one's going to tell me what to do.
So some of the memes that also came out of it was the Nazi hippies. So this is another part.
Right.
Nazi hippies when the new age and far right overlap, which is it's so comical because I don't consider myself far right by any sense of the word. Where, and a lot of truthers are more apolitical than anything, even though it's just the most spiritual and awakened people during this see the bigger picture of it all being connected. And it's like, obviously I'm pro America, but I'm also like pro Earth, regardless if it's flat or round or anything. It's like, I want all of humanity to succeed and all of the wars that we've been lied to and the motives behind it. We're all pawns. And everyone should be pissed. Everyone should be fighting against the establishment. But no, they're hashtagging Fauci, ouchie, and inserting themselves with aborted fetal cells. Oh, one thing, just because I brought that up. My brother's fiance was telling me this story about how her parents were all make your own decision. Do whatever, like get the vaccine if you want, do whatever you feel comfortable with. And then they went and got it, right? Ever since they got it, they've been pushing her nonstop to get it, like obsessive. And I'm thinking, like, is that part of like that robot slave thing that I always talk about? That it automatically like triggered them to be little like minions pushing the vax on everyone around them?
You see that article that's been going around maybe like the last 24 to 48 hours that are saying, like, I forget the context of the article, but it's just like there was like people who were saying, I no longer feel God the instant they got the vaccine.
Yeah. And I've also heard how people can't see, like, ones with psychic abilities, they would say, I can't see their aura anymore.
Yeah, that too. I posted that article this morning about not being able to feel God anymore. Someone posted it. I threw it up in my story and then put like the caption on it, like, hey, when you're hearing all this good news about getting the vaccination, are you still down to just jump in there and get the jab? And of course I put the song, the Hell No song, with that black dude in the white suit.
Yeah.
And I pulled into my driveway as I posted it. And before I parked my car, I got the, your post has been removed for violating Instagram.
Wow.
It was like within 10 seconds. And yeah, I don't know. I went and clicked on it. It's like, oh yeah, your account's going to be in danger of being deleted if you keep posting stuff like this. And I'm just like, it's a fucking meme and it's funny.
Also, why, if it's so far-fetched, just, what do you think about the Washington Post article?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of truth to it. I'll refer back to memes because that's in turn my love language.
Memeology.
It is. And I'm going to refer back to that webpage or the Facebook group I was in back during the election cycle for this year and was in since 2015. It was called God Emperor Trump's Dank Meme Stash. And it was an offshoot of God Emperor Bernie Dank Meme Stash, which got up to like 4 million members. And the creator of the page said, you want to know what? If these assholes can do it, we can do it better because the left can't meme. So he went and ripped like 4 or 5 really spicy memes off of 4chan and threw them into a Facebook group, and next thing you know, hundreds of thousands all the way up to millions of members eventually. And getting into this election cycle, it actually became a real thing directly to what you're talking about, all these different groups kind of coming together to form basically like an alliance in the Q movement. So there's a 3-tiered meme. I know you've seen it before. I believe it's either from Lord of the Rings or that fucking dragon show that was on HBO. I can't remember, Game of Thrones. And it's like, you know, the fat guy with the beard and then like the elf looking guy. And the first panel of the 3-tier meme is like, I never thought I'd see myself fighting alongside of whatever. But when we got to Stop the Steal this year and the page came back, we talked to the administrators of the Joe Biden is not my president. It was some random normie boomer page that started out and got up to like 3 million members before Stop the Steal. And we joined with them and took all of our like million members and threw it in this group that had millions of members. And I made the meme that said, you know, I'd never thought I'd see myself fighting alongside a boomer. And then the next panel is, well, don't you mean a friend? And then the last panel, the guy's like, I. And it's just like, yes, this movement has taken all of these people who have never even considered looking at each other. And we're literally fighting for our freedoms, for truth, information, and things of that nature right next to each other. And it does include a lot of people who are hippie-ish. I mean, you know, we had the girls from Russian Disinformation on yesterday on our show. And I don't think I would ever talk to either one of them ever in the real world if I didn't know them through this movement. And same thing with people like you. I mean, you live on the other side of the country geographically to me. I think our lifestyles kind of are polar opposite in regards to socially. And look at us, we've become really good, close friends.
What makes you say that about our social life?
I mean, I'll put it to you this way. Austin, one of the hosts from Russian Disinformation, was like Instagram storying herself on the way down to our studio yesterday. And, you know, some of it was funny. She had like four or five posts of her singing What a Man from, who sang that? That one black, there was like four gals R&B group from like the 90s. And it was terrible. But like the next couple panels were like her drinking a White Claw when she's driving. So that wouldn't necessarily be me. And I would probably cringe in real life if I saw it prior to this movement. But now I'm like, oh, that's our friend. Like, I hope she hasn't been pulled over.
Hi, Austin. I feel like we should, right? I feel like we should shout out to you since she was telling me, she was shouting me out yesterday.
She did a really good job of loving you yesterday. So I said, will you please stop telling everyone about her so I can tease her coming on our show at the end?
So sweet. And didn't you have Ian Smith on yesterday too, who was the patriot standing up against the COVID communism laws is it in your home state?
Yeah, home state of New Jersey. He's out in Belmar, New Jersey, and that's the Attilus Gym. And he came on yesterday. The audio is terrible. His connection. I really feel like the powers that be are really trying to suppress him, you know, down. And he's well known for being that big, burly, bearded, beastly looking man who kicked in the wood they put up over his doors at the gym they closed at the beginning of COVID, and he refused.
That's that toxic masculinity that I love to hear about.
And there's so many things about him that I didn't really know until I did my research. He's participating in Barstool Sports. He does not charge for gym memberships and hasn't charged any of the 700 people a day that go to his gym $1 since COVID started. He also participated in CPAC this year with not with physically Papa Trump, but the CPAC that Donald Trump spoke at the end of January. Ian Smith was there and he sat on a panel, which makes me believe, and I tease for anybody that wants to listen to our show, I asked him if he was going to run for governor. All of my friends from New Jersey were filling up my inbox this week were like, bro, you gotta fucking ask him. I figure since he's been on Tucker Carlson and Hannity a few times, Tucker quite a bit more, he's on there like every few weeks with an update. He'd probably save an announcement like that for his show, but he did not say no on mine, which makes me think just how well he's been received, the fact that he's participated in CPAC, that he might run for governor in New Jersey, which if you just look at him, you think like, hell fucking no. But when you think about the people there who have been, you know, Nazi style lockdown in one of the five worst states of lockdowns in the whole country, then he might be able to pick up a little bit of steam.
I agree. I think people are tired of the fit in the box politician bullshit. If something like that happens, you know that it's going to be like a Marjorie Taylor Greene or Ron DeSantis situation where they immediately hate on them. And I mean, 60 Minutes, Ron DeSantis.
We wanted to ask Governor DeSantis about the deal, but he declined our request for an interview. We caught up with him south of Orlando.
Publix, as you know, donated $100,000 to your campaign, and then you rewarded them with the exclusive rights to distribute the vaccination in Palm Beach.
So first of all, what you're saying is wrong.
How is that not pay to play?
That's a fake narrative. I met with the county mayor. I met with the administrator. I met with all the folks at Palm Beach County. And I said, here's some of the options. We can do more drive-through sites. We can give more to hospitals. We can do the Publix. And they said, we think that would be the easiest thing for our residents.
But Melissa McKinley, the county commissioner in the Glades, told us the governor never met with her about the Publix deal.
The criticism is that it's pay to play,
Governor. It's wrong. It's a fake narrative. I just disabused you of the narrative, and you don't care about the facts because obviously I laid it out for you in a way that is irrefutable. It's clearly not.
Isn't there the nearest Publix?
No, you're wrong. Yes,
that's
sir.
That's actually a fact. Here's a portion of what actually took place.
First pharmacies that had it were CVS and Walgreens, and they had a long-term care mission. They got vaccine in the middle of December. As we got into January, we wanted to expand the distribution points. So yes, you had the counties, you had some drive-through sites, you had hospitals that were doing a lot, but we wanted to get it into communities more. So we reached out to other retail pharmacies, Publix, Walmart. Obviously, CVS and Walgreens had to finish that mission, and we said we're gonna use you as soon as you're done with that. For the Publix, they were the first one to raise their hand, say they were ready to go.
Governor DeSantis continued on for several more minutes, explaining that Publix rolled out the vaccine on a trial basis and got 100% positive feedback. Publix is also speaking out, saying the 60 Minutes narrative of pay to play is simply not true, saying the irresponsible suggestion that there was a connection between campaign contributions made to Governor DeSantis and our willingness to join other pharmacies in support of the state's vaccine distribution efforts is absolutely false and offensive.
That was terrible.
And whatever. It's like, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. He's doing everything he fucking can to get these fucking robot slave injections to whoever fucking wants to sign their life over. God damn it.
Yeah, well, they actually announced today that California is getting ready for full open up not too long down the road. I believe April 15th is like kind of the getting close to over 50%. And then I think they said, I want to say it's May or June 15th, that if everything continues to go the way they want, then it's going to be just back to normal by the summer. And I really think that they tried to stop the bad stuff that they were saying on TV, the fourth surge, the double secret retarded ninja strains from Brazil. Nationwide schools are opening back up. And just this week, the CDC put out there that, like, not only is the most deadliest ever strain of COVID out there now, the only people that can carry it are children, but it's undetectable. So now everybody's at risk. So right when they're trying to get the kids back, I mean, it's just, that's literally what they said. An almost untraceable, but four times as deadly strain of COVID is now out there, carried by only children who have not been able to really carry or transmit it or get it this entire time.
You know, I'm just minding my own business, going on YouTube, trying to find like my super high vibe like HC video music, and then all it's like mutant strain here, mutant strain there, mutant strain there. It's like, dude, get the fuck off here. Like, you're obviously not on my recently played, just like my meme, stop trying to make COVID happen. Like, we're not buying your bullshit anymore. And
like my meme, and don't report me. you saw that lady that was on Fredo Cuomo's show last week, right? The one who accidentally said, like,
clear to them that the vaccine is the ticket back to pre-pandemic life, and the window to do that is really narrowing. I mean, you were mentioning, Chris, about how all these states are reopening. They're reopening at 100%, and we have a very narrow window to tie reopening policy to vaccination status, because otherwise, if everything is reopened, then what's the carrot going to be? How are we going to incentivize people to actually get the vaccine?
What's the carrot going to be?
Yeah, she's like, what carrot are we going to have to dangle in front of these people if we just, like, go full, go open up? And I think the fact that in addition to Florida and Texas kind of setting the standard for opening up, there's so many people out there who don't know. When those two states kind of went full go, so did 17 other states, which include democratically ran ones like Connecticut, places like Georgia, which is now apparently a blue state. That state only had COVID restrictions and mask mandates for like 90% of their state for 1 month a year ago. And then it went back to fucking normal. Like, it, stores didn't close, small businesses didn't shutter. And people just need to realize that, like, the narrative you see on TV is what the people in New York, Chicago, Atlanta, Philadelphia, and Los Angeles, and San Francisco want you to hear. They think those are the only places in the United States that matter, and everything else is like completely ridiculous. And it's just not the fact of the matter. So many, I mean, they even tried with the, I really feel like having the borders open at the beginning of the current administration was a direct slap in the face to like people like Greg Abbott who were opening his state. And, you know, they were just going to say, you want to know what? Fucking let them all come in. They're reporting that 10% of all the migrants who are crossing are COVID positive. It's probably closer to like 25 or 30. But it's just because the virus is not what it is, unless it hits like the demographic that it's intended to stop, which is something I want to bring up real quick. And I know I'm ranting. I just thought of this last night. Hear me out. COVID targeted the elderly, the sick, the obese, and the people that were locked down like in nursing homes, right? So you're talking about one of the most expensive to cater to government reliant demographics in the country, if not the world, right? Who requires the most money? Fat, old, sick people. They constantly need to go to the doctor. They always go to the hospital. They require ambulance. They're on like 500 different medications, right? All the government's doing on this demographic is losing money. Now, when you look at like one of the most biggest entities in the country that always runs in the red, it's the medical field because of this demographic. Now, I know that they wanted it to be or sound like the plague that was going to end everything. What if the actual plan was to not only eliminate worldwide a huge portion of that demographic, which frees up all this money for worldwide governments to now not have to spend on them, but put something that the government has always invested in, the medical field and hospitals and medicine, back into the black, because they're not going to be spending these billions, if not trillions of dollars worldwide on taking care of all of these fat, old, sick people that got killed by COVID. What if that was the play and they just wanted to make it sound worse, but the only people that were literally affected and died was that demographic while saving an entity that takes care of them and always operates in the red? I don't hear a lot of people talking about that, but that's just kind of the way I tied it together.
No, that's actually genius. And I know that you know that I work in financial services, specifically life and long-term care. So I think about this type of stuff a lot. And I've never thought about that because the people that I deal with are well off and we're insuring them against these things. However, the people who do not have the assets to put this type of insurance in place are leeches on the government.
Yep.
And I don't say that as a way that I think of them that way. This is how the government thinks of you. The government hates you. And it's like, I don't know who needs to hear that today, but the government fucking hates you. They hate everything about you. All you are to them is a fucking number. You pay your fucking taxes and they fucking extort, run it back through like cash laundering to put it right back in their fucking pockets. And anyone who thinks otherwise, like, I'm so sick of it. I'm so sick of going out in public and seeing stupid ass people with their fucking masks on. And I don't give a fuck if you're from Florida, if you're not from Florida, get the fucking mask off your face when I'm walking outside next to you. Like, I'm about to start going ham on people. Like, that's where I'm at. I'm about to lose my shit. Just like the motherfucker across the street from me, who I told you about.
Yeah.
And I told her on my last episode, I told the story. This motherfucker was the one that I used to stand at my desk and look at him across the street because he used to wear his mask to the mailbox. He used to wear his mask in his car by himself. I used to see him get out, walk to his house with his fucking mask. He probably wore the goddamn mask in his house by himself. And here he goes, you know, having a fucking conniption, you know, blowing bullets in the neighbor because he's probably living fear-based for a year and whatever it's been, and just went fucking psycho and lost his fucking mind. And then of course I talked to my neighbor and she's all like, oh, he just fits the profile of the, you know, loner white male. And I'm thinking like, bitch, I probably got more guns than him. Like, why do you got to make it fucking political, dude? God damn it. Why do you got to bring the fucking white man and the loner? And it's like, okay, so just wondering, if it was a black man across the street, would you have brought up his race? No.
Oh, yeah. Black Lives Matter
sign on your fucking lawn.
Yeah, they would have brought up his race to say, oh my God, I can only imagine what that guy's going through to make him snap like this. He's probably so oppressed.
Oh my God. So I have refused to watch any of the George Floyd trials and all of that. I'm from the stance, which I've said multiple times, I think the entire thing was CGI. I don't believe that ever happened on that day. I do think that George Floyd once existed, but he passed long before that, and they used him and some other person to create a completely fictitious person along with the cops and the main characters in the video. What's been going on with the news events that they're using to predict the next wave of BLM riots? So have you been watching the trials?
Yes, I have. I have been watching the trials, and I've seen a lot of underlying tones of oppression that are going to make for the perfect tinder to start those social justice riots back up in time just for the summer. You have his drug dealer who was in the car with him, who was lawfully detained and released without incident, basically pleading the fifth. You also have his best friend, supposedly, who was not in the car with him, but came in as a character witness, pleading the fifth. You had his wife or his girlfriend come in and basically gave no relevant testimony, except for the fact that he had, and this is probably a play at what you say in your narrative, because I don't necessarily disagree with you, that he OD'd back in 2019. I think just by her saying that, that was enough to kind of validate your point of the actual instance that happened never happening. And then you have released finally after all this time side-by-side body cams showing the actual placement of where this officer's knee was supposedly on this guy's neck, which it wasn't, it was on his back. And I mean, they've had supposedly did a full forensic audit on him, which included tissue and muscles underneath the skin, which showed no abrasion, no blood inclusion, no bruising. The amount of drugs that were in his system was absolutely ridiculous. I do play a doctor sometimes in my real life. And when I do, I can tell you that that amount of fentanyl in him would have killed anyone, not just someone as big as him, 100%. In addition to all the other drugs, pre-existing heart condition, and the fact that he was COVID positive, just based off the forensics. And then you've had the chief of police from that town basically recanting his original statement and then saying he really can't give enough insight into it. It looks like it's going to turn out to be, there's no way that they can convict this cop other than fear. If they convict this cop of anything, it's going to be basically because, I mean, Antifa and Black Lives Matter are already kind of protesting outside of the courthouse right now. So what do you expect?
I think, like I said, it's all fucking set up. They've thought this all throughout to this point, knowing that they could have a second round. And what do you think? Because now playing this out, let's imagine the riots occur again. And now we have the border crisis and we have Joe Biden as our president to handle it. We obviously know that in our community, people think that the white hats are in control. So to play along with that narrative, do you think that could potentially show the left or the people who are still sleeping how Joe Biden handled it versus the previous presidents? Which still, I mean, if you think about the state governing itself, would it really matter? Are we just going to hear more excuses? And what's your opinion on white hats being in control in general?
I mean, it kind of has to be that the white hats are in control. You just look at the border crisis. Like, there's no reason. It's so blatantly obvious now, the night and day contrast between the previous administration and the current, whatever it is. I still don't like to give it the credit all the way up to the point of calling it an administration. What they're doing on the southern border in regards to the drugs, the human trafficking, the death and despair that goes along with all of these people who are being not migrant caravaned, but literally semi-trucked up here by NGOs, by George Soros and people of that nature, by lawyers who want to circumvent and destroy our immigration system from the third world up to the US border. That's number one. Number two, COVID is becoming more and more, we all know what it is, but the actual face value legitimacy of it being a hoax is becoming more and more prevalent every day. There's more and more people who are famous or have status or have power who just say, like, I mean, just if you have half a brain and you still don't believe that this isn't what they tell you it was, look at all the hot mics. Look at all the people who said, like, okay, we're about to go on TV, make sure you mask up. Or how stupid are all these people? They think, you know, you need to wear your mask everywhere. Or people who just don't do it and flaunt it. Like all of those, you know, elites that just get caught in airports or going out to restaurants because they know nothing's going to happen. And how much of a hypocritical double standard that's been over the last year plus now. And the fact that there's going to be a lot of people who feel really terrible about how bad they were lied. Because I think there's this big vax movement online. An anti-vax movement is kind of countering it, but it's being suppressed. But I really do feel like an overwhelming majority of the people in this country don't feed into this whole narrative. I think we've seen so much of the LA, San Francisco, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, Atlanta, Miami narrative of like, those are the only places that matter. This is the only stats we need to give you. But, you know, and then you have all of the countries all over the world, Russia, North Korea, Iran, China, basically telling Joe Biden, either like, number one, go fuck yourself. Number two, you have no more status on the global stage. Number three, we like the guy who was in before you, so we don't want to talk to you. You know, number four, go fuck yourself. If I didn't say that already, I know I did, but I'm saying it again. And you just take all of this stuff and how fed up the people are and how beat down the people are. You know, there's rich yuppies who want their lives back. They want to be able to drink but next to their pool when their kids are at school and have sex with their pool boy and cheat on their husbands that they haven't been able to do in 13 months because their kids have been home Zoom schooling every day. You know, and I think it's going to be, it, well, it's true though. People like that want to come back to having their lives. And, you know, when you put all of these things together and we keep working hard and continue to unwaver in the face of cancellation, maybe being fired from our jobs, maybe being kicked out of, you know, being disowned from our family. I really feel like even though holding the line is something that's so cliche to say, it's literally coming to a crucial point that we really need to do it because all this stuff's being exposed. And we're not talking about like 13 families. We're not talking about George Soros or the Vatican or the Jews or anything like that. We're literally talking about all of these things in the United States that have happened over the last 13 months and how they're all kind of coming to a head. And the Democrats and the liberals have backed themselves into a corner because, like I already previously mentioned, the election cycle for the midterms starts basically in September. What are they going to do to clean all this up in the meantime? It's a lot of mess to clean up. And you're talking about leveling the world stage, ending coronavirus and reopening back up, all the mental health and social health issues that we're going to have coming out of this. You know, you got the economy, you got the border. How do you fix all this stuff? They're never going to be able to. And I really hope it runs into something that kind of gets more libertarian-minded, conservative-minded people back into power who are just America first and know that Papa's going to come back sooner or later, regardless of what happens to the election investigations that are going on, or if we have to wait a little bit longer to get him back in office. I mean, Mike Lindell did tell us last week that Donald Trump will be the president again by August. So, I mean, I have no reason other than to believe him. What about the QAnon documentary?
Oh, I'm so glad you said that, actually.
It's eating my soul now, and I have new insight that I want to
discuss. This is why I value you so much in my life, because I refuse to watch this stuff. I refuse to watch the George Floyd debacle bullshit. Which I don't think everything is fake, but I think that's fucking fake. That smells fake. And the QAnon HBO documentary, I also refuse to watch. I had no interest in it from the moment I heard about it. But I would like you to use this as an opportunity to tell me and any other listener who feels the same as me, give us a summary of that, and then let's hear your opinions.
Well, it's like I said on my show, if you want to see a cool way that they sum up everything from when Q started, you get it in the intro. They do like a quirky little song, and it's got like all the symbolism, like everything, you know, from like Code Monkey to the Red Pill to We Have It All, Stay Tuned. Like it's all in there in like this graphic with like a catchy song. But then after like the first 20 minutes of the first episode, so 20 minutes into 6 hours, you're led down a road that anyone who follows the movement is a quit their job to follow it, uneducated, kind of middle of the country rube who like, you know, wears like the tie-dyed Q on fire t-shirt with their Make America Great Again hat, two-tone jeans and Crocs to Donald Trump events. And that's like the kind of the intro. That's how they introduce you to the demographic, which is the movement. And then for the next 4 episodes, it's a bad business deal gone wrong, where the guy from 4chan, who turned it into 8chan, the little boneless chicken nugget in the wheelchair guy, Hot Wheels, he was kind of businessly manipulated by Jim Watkins, who they completely make to look like the creepiest person you'll ever meet. And how they basically fought back and forth, and everything one did or the other did was the worst thing ever, all the way up to going and telling the FBI on each other, literally. So you get like the drama of like an MTV sitcom. And then they just give you little tiny doses of Ron, kind of make him mysterious. I mean, everybody knows how brilliant he is. People who were really involved in this movement knows that he worked directly with high-ranking members of the Trump administration, including House members, Congress people, all the way up to Trump. Like, I believe Ron wouldn't say that they specifically talked directly on the show, but made it seem like he was on conference calls where Trump was in the room giving his approval or disapproval for things that Ron was working on. So that's how high, like some random person who's essentially, he's a hacker. That's what he is. If hacker he's getting man. Access like that, right? He's way more than the show ever makes him out to look. You know, they kind of always show him in like Japan meditating and doing like air karate on mountains and, you know, wearing like a shirt that doesn't fit him and like looking kind of scruffy in the Philippines and this, that, and the other thing. And when he comes to the United States to testify after the Texas mass shooter, because they alleged that it started on 8chan and Jim Watkins came over from the Philippines and Ron came with him to testify on Capitol Hill in regards to that, started on Facebook and Instagram. They took like a cross-country road trip and it makes them look like retards. And then you kind of get to the episode where they allude to Steve Bannon being Q. There's like a hot mic moment where you can't tell. Colin, the director, puts the camera down and then Ron Watkins goes into it and starts to allude to, oh yeah, it's totally Steve Bannon. Here's how I know. You know, I can triangulate where the IP address comes from. Q did a post outside of Michael Avenatti. He was the lawyer who represented the porn star that sued Donald Trump on this day at that time, right in front of his office. Steve Bannon's house is only 22 minutes away from there, using the same IP address. Has to be him. And then they kind of go for like a whole episode into that before debunking it, because there's a bad relationship between Michael Flynn and Steve Bannon. Michael Flynn's like one of the, you know, most beloved people in the movement. And then you get to the last episode and the last 5 minutes after you go through all of this bullshit that has nothing to do with Q and more to do with the bad business deal between Jim Watkins and the original creator of 4chan, where Cullen and Ron are talking via Zoom. Ron kind of has a slip and he's talking about like the journey that they've gone on. And then he refers to himself in the first person as the journey that he's been on, kind of leading all these people. And then like Cullen freezes it and he's like, and that's where Ron slipped. It blew my mind. I had to take a step back. And then he unpauses the video and Ron starts laughing and then it's like an awkward silence. And he's like, Ron's like, yeah, you know, the journey that we've all been on, by the way, I'm not Q. And then they both start laughing. So it's like, is the whole show a joke? I don't fucking know. I know that Ron's not him. I think you probably know that Ron's not him. I think he's one of the, as close to the inner circle as you can, just based off of his connectivity to Trump and what he did during the end of this current administration. But I don't even think he's one of the 10 or less.
Ron hadn't just been participating in Q research. It sounded like he was leading it.
Yeah, so thinking back on it, it was basically 3 years of intelligence training, teaching normies how to do intelligence work. It's basically what I was doing anonymously before, but never as Q.
See that smile? Ron had slipped up. He knew it, and I knew it. And after three tireless years of cat and mouse, well...
never as cute, I promise.
Never as cute.
Because I am not cute. It never was.
And Colin Hoback joins me now. It's such a pleasure to meet you. I really was so fascinated by your documentary. I mean, your access, it's incredible how much time and how deep you got into this. For those who may be confused as to why that moment was so shocking, can you lay out briefly who this guy Ron Watkins is, what his role in the QAnon origin story is, and why that revelation from him was so important?
Sure, yeah. So the person I'm talking to is Ron Watkins, a.k.a. Code Monkey. He is someone who has been named in the Q, drops QAnon's drops. So there's a lot of lore around this character in the world of QAnon. He is also the admin of the site where Q posts. I had spent years playing cat and mouse with this character. I thought that it was possible that, he would know more about Q than anyone else because Q posts on his site. And I had always been waiting for that moment where Ron slips up. And the first time it happened was a few months ago. And I think it happened as a result of a kind of super optimism where he had just gotten away with it for so long. He wasn't really watching his words. And you can see in the clip that you just played, he actually breaks into a smile before before I do, because he realized, I think, what had just happened. And I think you can even kind of hear him muttering under his breath. And I just remember when Ron said that, I looked over at my camera person. And I was just like, he just admitted he's Q. For me, it was just a mind-blowing moment.
That's often one of those moments where you just pray that the camera person is actually rolling, that there is, like, the record was on and that everything actually has been saved. And you said in the clip you'd been talking to Watkins and his dad, Jim, for years. You both start laughing. What was going through your mind? I mean, did he say more about it later? I mean, he continues to deny he was Q, right?
Well, he'll always deny that he's Q, because I think he would be concerned about any of potential legal ramifications that might come with it. But I also think that deep down he kind of wants the credit.
Yeah.
And I saw this at various moments along the way, where I think he would kind of give me nudges, sort of hint that, yeah, he's behind it, but he can't really say it at this point.
It's also so remarkable when, you know, there's all these people out there who, for one reason or another, for whatever in their lives has brought them to, you know, go down this rabbit hole, believe that Q was early on, that he was a member of the Trump administration, that he was a high-level intelligence official with a special magical Q clearance, that, you know, he had access to, I mean, and all the things that Q predicted was going to happen just never happened and was continually proven wrong. And yet, these people still continued to believe and just came up with new explanations for why everything he said was wrong. The fact that it might be this guy, of course it's like somebody like this and not, some intelligence official somewhere.
Well, I mean, Ron Watkins has all of the money, right? He has he's interested in quote unquote red pilling the masses, which is kind of getting his worldview out to people. He doesn't like the mainstream media, and he was trying to build an audience. And I think to some extent, he and his father are also are kind of interested in taking over the world. So, you know, it checks out. But I would say that there, and you see this in the story, that even though Ron is, I believe, the linchpin in all of this, there is this broader network. And over time, as Q increased in power, you did see figures like General Flynn. You'll see another general who is seeding intel with some of the Q-tubers, these people who sort of preach the word of Q on YouTube and make sense of it to their followers. And you see that this group of ex-military actors are leveraging Q and hijacking the narrative for their own, you know, for their own ends.
I don't know. I think if it was him, which I don't think, but if it was him, or if he knew who it was, and he's not telling the American people or anyone in the movement or anyone who follows Q, knowing that it's completely pacifying Americans to stand up for their rights, that sounds like a black hat to me. And there's really no other way to put it, because if you cared about it, let's say that Q is a psyop in the bad way. I mean, it's definitely a psychological operation regardless. But is it a black hat or a white hat operation is the question. If he knows who it is and he's not disclosing it, he is a black hat. And I think I'm starting to think he's a black hat in general. I mean, who agrees to go on this HBO documentary and then to watch
for the years?
Exactly. And then slow burn, and then Colin or whatever his name is, the director or producer of it, goes on CNN. And our friend Lee, he just made a comment right before this that CNN is Q for the left.
sure
change my mind. And so yeah, and seeing it on CNN, obviously that totally was like, okay, that's where I bought it. Like the second it appears on CNN, the second you know it's all a fucking lie. And
when they're making Anderson Cooper relive his childhood, is that what you're talking about?
Jesus Christ, I can't take it with him.
And the guy's like, you know what? I just want to apologize and say that I'm sorry that I accused you of
being no. Yes, I've definitely seen that. I know exactly what you're talking about.
I was also called a pedophile. Phony flight logs purported to be from convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein's airplane appeared online with my name and dozens of other well-known people. It's all made up, of course. A QAnon supporter seemed to believe it, or at least use it to try to harass me. Jitarth Jadeja was a believer until June 2019.
Did you at the time believe that Democrat, high-level Democrats and celebrities were worshiping Satan, drinking the blood of children?
Anderson, I thought you did that. And I would like to apologize for that right now. So I apologize for thinking that you ate babies. But yeah, 100%.
You actually believe that I was drinking the blood of children?
Yes, I did.
Was it something about me that made you think that?
It's because Q specifically mentioned you, and he mentioned you very early on. He mentioned you by name, and from there, if he also talked about, like, for example, like your family. But yeah, and I'm gonna be honest, like, people still talk about that to this day. There were posts about that just 4 days ago. So some people thought you were a robot.
But no, this one, the director of this documentary went on CNN.
Right.
Yeah,
he did.
I just played it.
And then Ron Watkins posted on Telegram, apparently, that your reminder, I am not Q. Have a good weekend. And I'm so done with his little coy PC answers. Like, I mean, I know you listened to the My Maria interviews with him, and why did he agree to go on this podcast and say absolutely fucking nothing? I listened to the first one, and he was very PC. Yes. And I listened to the whole thing because this was before, you know, inauguration day and before everything. And he was a huge voice in all of the election interference in et cetera.
Yeah.
And so I was very, very interested. Now on the second, and I think he's coming on there for a third time as well.
And he's bringing,
I'm kind of, yeah. And it's just like, why? I don't want to hear someone who went on CNN.
I listen to My Maria. I enjoy her show. Her and I are friendly, and you know, I like some of the guests that she has on and what she has to say. But it starts to like raise the questions for me, and starts bringing up red flags. Like, what is her involvement in this? What does someone who has a podcast that talks about everything and anything under the sun have any business to do with someone who's talking to Donald Trump? Going on their show and talking about this movement that the both sides of the aisle have pretty much demonized twice. And now is going to go on for three times and bring the director who made this movie about it. It just doesn't make sense. Like, what if she's a psyop? And she was just created, or maybe doesn't even exist. And she's only there to try and steer the narrative or the movement in one direction or the other. Like, I really started thinking about that, because she always puts out there how her and her real person are two totally different things who are not connected, who could never exist in the same universe. And she always wants to be one and not the other. She kind of outlines herself as the whole narrative of Q, as something that's always existed, but no one's ever known about. The world isn't ready for Q and everything that's gone on, and we've been told since the dawn of time, to kind of exist together, but yet here they are. And now someone who supposedly knows who it is and the director who followed that person around and did a documentary on him for 4 years are going to appear for a third time on this anomaly of a show and possibly give full disclosure. It makes no sense. Why wouldn't you go on? I'm pretty sure that, like, let's just say you can't even get into the mainstream media. Steve Bannon's War Room, the podcast, has 50 million downloads on iTunes. He would for sure take Ron and Cullen.
But did Steve Bannon ask him to go on the podcast?
Right.
Because I remember when that happened and people flooded it on Twitter to try to get him to go on her show. Mm-hmm. And then he obviously agreed to do it. And I was so excited because I was like, ooh, this is going to be juicy. And it wasn't. There was no juice.
It was bone and dry.
To me, not by any fault of hers. It was him. I mean, but I do think like that it could have been pressed a little more. Like some things could have been pressed a little more. And now that it's kind of all said and done with the HBO documentary being out there.
Yep.
Let's see. I mean, I kind of want that juice pressed. I want the juice, you know. I want to know what's happening. And just the fact that this man was on CNN, why not Fox?
Right. Why not Newsmax or One America?
And like, that's the devil and him being associated with that. And so is HBO in a sense.
Oh yeah. HBO is as deep state as you can get.
It's weird. I don't understand it either. I've been kind of racking my brains thinking about that. He was like being retweeted by Donald Trump, et cetera, et cetera. If you want to talk about someone to reach our movement, it could have been a bigger type show if that's what he wanted. I kind of think it was like, did no one reach out to him? Because you know as well as I do, you ask people to be on your show. A lot of people will say, yeah, that you never would expect it, you know?
Yeah.
Or they just don't respond, but it's kind of just snowballing in this way where right. At the time when he did the first episode with her, we had no idea that this HBO documentary was coming out. And he kept saying, oh, well, I don't want to, because something's coming up, this project I'm working on, something to that effect. I remember.
Remember how hurt our community was reeling from, you know, January 6th and Stop the Steal. It was just something. Yeah, it's just like it's bringing up all these emotions that need to be brought up. Me personally, honestly, unless it's like the second coming, and I'm using the term lightly, I'm not being literal, the second coming of Jesus coming down from the sky and like the embodiment of Q, and that person not being able to be killed or stopped, and everything happening that really is part of the plan. I don't want to know who it is, period. Like when they say the Patriots are in control, when they say the White Hats are working hard, when we're getting drops on a regular basis, that's enough to motivate me. It should be enough to motivate everybody too. Like knowing who this person is does nothing but eventually deflate or delegitimize the entire movement, because someone's going to be let down.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
That's a good point. I honestly kind of get very perturbed when people are so hyper focused on it. I think it is a good tool. I've said this many times. I think it is a good tool. I think it brings up interesting points. I think it has helped wake up a lot of people, but it's the same way I feel about the Bible, this blind faith. And who knows, man-made. I personally think it's more, more of a chance that it's an artificial type quantum computer or a combination. There was one drop which I always go back to, and it had something to do with an extraterrestrial type vibe, and
which I don't hate
that either. That's to me, like, that's much more appealing, obviously, to me.
I mean, if at the end of the day, full disclosure is what is going to happen, which includes proof of intelligent life elsewhere, that will be the end of modern religion, or maybe the start of it. Like, hey, we planted these seeds and we told these stories about people who may or may not have existed thousands of years ago, so that you guys can have kind of a crutch structure to rely on as you developed as a existence. I wouldn't necessarily hate that. And then, you know, if we do get full disclosure, then we probably will find out if the Big Bang ever happened, what else is out there, obviously, this, that, and the other thing. But at the same time, and getting back to a much smaller than the creation of the universe, Ron Watkins and Q, for me personally, I know what he is. He's a master hacker. He helped work as a patriot behind the scenes to help our last president. And he's a human. And that's pretty much
it. He's a black hat.
In regards to Q. Yeah, in regards to Q, I don't know. And I don't need to know. That part of the movement doesn't motivate me. What motivates me is white hats are in control. The government is the only, or the military is the only way. You know, patriots in control, panic in DC. Those things motivate me. Not.
So I want to kind of switch gears a little bit here.
Switch them.
I just brought up the Bible, right? And I've been thinking a lot about this, where I have some of these people in the movement, which, going back to the Washington Post, completely fucking wrong. Yeah, there's a lot of new age, but there's a lot of fucking Christians, and there's a lot of people of all different types of religions. So one of them is Christian. They're very prevalent in this. I've been thinking a lot about the book of Revelations and predictive programming, how everything's lining up perfectly for the deep state with their vax jab and the mark of the beast. And it's just like, almost like they wrote it, right?
You know, it's one of those things I'm a huge proprietor of. I believe I said it when you and James came on our show, and I say it almost every week. I tell my kids too, and I tell anybody that listens. If you've seen it on television, it's more than likely real and based off something that's already happened or is happening. And I'm talking about like space travel, superheroes, you name it. It's probably real, and they wouldn't be shoved down our throats so much if they weren't trying to eventually be conditioning us for something. That's just the way I feel. And whether it be real life, like political or religious things, I agree with that. And in the same context, like I just mentioned, like movies, like I'm not saying like Superman flying through outer space, but I am talking about like spaceships and, you know, time travel and things of that nature. Very more than likely real. And you would probably be in the minority if you said absolutely not real, just based off everything that's gone on.
What a perfect segue. It's almost like you do this on your own.
I do something.
King Kong versus Godzilla. Said you watched it. Did you say in theaters?
We actually went and were traditional Americans in theaters.
What a concept. I've heard a lot about how it is. Well, Elon Musk, obviously, he tweeted conspiracy theories, dream movie or wet dream. Yep. Sorry, wet dream, I think what he said.
Yeah, wet dream.
And I am actually interviewing Flat Earth Dave, who you've had on your show, which timing is impeccable. So tell me a little bit about your thoughts on the movie, and please say spoiler before you spoil anything.
I just think the movie, I won't spoil the actual ending, but I will say that there is a huge, not flat, but go to Antarctica / there's an entire like Middle Earth that exists in this movie, and that's where the monsters came from. That has nothing to do with the ending, but it's like where they originated from. And I guess the island that King Kong lived on was like a place where those mythical monsters could live. But they do eventually take him to like Antarctica, which is a big no-no. Well, here's a spoiler alert, not for the movie, but for all of us truthers. There's a hidden military base with a huge door that leads to this Earth that exists either under or inside of the Earth.
No fucking way.
Yeah, it's actually cinematically pleasing, minus all the monster stuff. I still think there's a lot of symbolism in like Godzilla and King Kong. It's pretty funny.
Would you call it a conspiracy theories wet dream?
Yes, when you break down all the symbolism. Like there is a, imagine this, government run, spooky dark entity who's doing things behind the scenes to manipulate the entire world. And they pit Earth's two mightiest heroes, King Kong and Godzilla, against each other to hopefully eliminate one of them so they'll have less things to kill with their, air quoting, plan. Now factor in like amazing fight scenes, very minimal talking, kind of weird looking at the fat kid from Deadpool 2 and now like a teenager 11 from Stranger Things, both of them kind of like in puberty years. Wasn't really buying that. My wife, however, did find an excellent point to shit on me, because one of the other main characters in the movie is a guy who has a podcast who's supposedly trying to tell everyone about all this bad stuff that's going on, but nobody believes him. And like, there was this one point where like, he's getting arrested or something and he's getting like pushed into a cop car or whatever. And he's like, hey, do you listen to my podcast? He's like, I got like 200 follows. And my wife like looked at me and she's like, oh, that's totally you. I said, first of all, we have a lot more than 200 followers. I said, second of all, we don't talk about Godzilla, but here I am talking about him. So, but yeah, it's kind of like symbolism all over the place. Divide and conquer, shadow government, big scary plan, middle or flat earth, world in despair, heroes working behind the scenes. Imagine that, some like fat dude who has a podcast, which would be me, and two teenagers are going to help save the world. Those are like the patriots that are in control. It is a conspiracy theorist wet dream.
I'm excited. I might actually watch that. I haven't been watching any movie. It's crazy to think about because I used to watch so much TV. And you talk to a lot of people going through this shift. And you don't have no interest anymore in binge watching. I want to know if you think, especially after you had Flat Earth Dave, what do you think about the shape of Earth, Mother Earth, and did it change before and after you had him on your show?
Yes and no. I personally have a lot of different views on the whole thing with, I think a lot of stuff doesn't make sense. Number one, for me, the moon. I don't believe the moon landing ever happened. I believe we did that in a Hollywood studio. I believe the space race was staged and was a continuation of Nazi propaganda in combating with the Russians, because they were really pissed at the end of World War II at us And I think it was just for a reinvigorating the country after long, long, hard wars with lots of death and a ruined economy and a terrible infrastructure. The space race was staged. The physics of the moon doesn't make sense, how it's light at night, but it's being reflected by something that's behind it, and how that reflection off the water makes the moon glow. That makes no sense to me, but I'm not a physicist. I also don't know how, like, I know the moon goes in phases, but why, like, sometimes at like 2 o'clock in the morning, it's like right above the tree and huge. And then like 2 hours later, it's like at midnight where the sun would be. So it would be like at noon and small. Like, how does it move that fast sometimes? And just all of that stuff. In regards to the Earth and the shape of the Earth, I don't know. I know something's going on in Antarctica with the Antarctic courts. All the countries that have fought themselves from pretty much the dawn of time all came together to agree on this. Could it be alien technology? Could it be something on the other side? I don't know. But it seems like some of that stuff, you know, no flying over Antarctica, no exploring in Antarctica.
There was a video I saw, which I could never find again, on a man who was on a show, like on National Geographic or something like that. And he was in a submarine. Okay. He said that he saw a lake in the middle of the bottom of the ocean, and he expressed surprise for this. So him and his crew, they tried to submerge into the lake and they bounced off of it. And then shortly after this was aired, he passed.
Imagine that. Heart attack or brain aneurysm?
The heart attacks are those like Nikola Tesla weapons, right? That's what I think.
Hey, you know who I'm scared for right now? I'm pretty sure you'd be in agreement with this. Based as fuck, Bane mask from Batman on, fully activated, red eyes, Clarence Thomas.
Yes.
He seems like he is our last great hope in the Supreme Court, the only uncompromised member, and he just doesn't give a fuck, and we all know where that usually leads to.
Could be insulated.
I hope so.
He had some words to say about Section 230. Know that.
Yeah, and that's coming off of his previous statement of that the election was legitimately stolen.
Right.
I mean, he was the only one that said we needed to review those five states and said he had extreme discontent with it.
Can you elaborate on the whole Section 230 thing that came out this week?
I mean, it's just, he kind of basically says that, like, these internet providers and social media platforms need to be held more accountable. I guess, like, you know, for someone who's not into tech and laws, aside from shit posting like I am, Section 230 basically provides protection. Let's just say you're on Twitter, you post something, I jump in your comments and I call you the N-word straight up. Like, hey, nice post, you're an N-bomb. I can sue you for liability, but I can't sue Twitter right now and that piece of shit, Jack Dorsey, for allowing you to exist on there and make these comments. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it also gives discretion for fact checkers. And I've had several people who have been in the fact check community, like Tom Papert from the National File on InfoWars. I'll plug him again. Also administrator, God Emperor Trump's dank meme stash, formerly on Facebook. He has been fact checked for years running a conservative news publication online by someone who used to be like a high ranking official at CNN. The only reason he gets fact checked is because his narrative is opposite what was the narrative at CNN. And there's no other reason than that. He gave specific examples where his articles would be fact-checked. And the only reason that his articles were fact-checked, because in the comments it would say, people who have already fact-checked articles similar to this agree that this narrative may or may not be false. And that was it. Regardless of what they were saying is true, regardless of what I just said didn't give you an actual fact-check, it was still underneath your article. So to the uneducated or someone who's like new to the game, not like us, they see that and they're like, that thing's at the bottom. That's almost like, you know, for more COVID information underneath your post, click on the link to see the CDC guidelines. We see that and we roll our eyes. Normal people see that. NPCs see that and they're just like, ooh, their account's probably going to get deleted, which may or may not be true. But still, at the end of the day, it doesn't mean that what the narrative the person's saying isn't correct. It may just be suppressed. So Section 230 also gives protection to those companies to independently govern themselves in legal terms, but in realist terms, it's nuke whoever the fuck doesn't agree with their narrative, period.
If the government owned Facebook, which it does just in the shadows, or Instagram and Twitter, et cetera, et cetera, and they were censoring in the same way, wouldn't it be applicable then? So just because they have a face, the puppet, Mark Zuckerberg.
Jack Dorsey, name them all and try finding a picture of any of those people when they were children. Not.
Ew, God, you just fucking gave me the fucking creeps, okay?
It's the truth. You want to know what? I just got a reverse chill too, and it's pretty weird. I'm not even lying. If we were on video, I'd show you both my nipples are hard. And it's not like the good, it's not the good kind. No, but the thing is,
besides like that. Brown.
Oh, thank you. I don't have nipple rings. Besides the grainy 90s pictures of Gates, Dorsey, Lizardberg, and that's the only picture you see of them. They're wearing like a wrinkled white t-shirt and some like 80s jeans with some Converse sneakers, and they got their hands like on the top of a cubicle or a hand on their hip, and they're like standing next to a computer in a garage. Where are the pictures of them on family vacation? These are like billionaires who basically control the entire narrative of the world. Why aren't there pictures of their mom and dad, their families, high school yearbooks that like could be put out there as like funny things? Like, oh my God, look at this hair when he was 10 years old and in like, you know, fifth grade. Nothing, nothing. Because they're so rich, they have to be private. Bullshit. There's people who were supposedly grew up with these guys, were in their classes in elementary, middle, and high school. There's nothing, no yearbooks, nothing. Makes no sense. One thing that Ron Paul has proposed in regards to 230, which I kind of like, because I do like a majority of the stuff he proposes, especially all the stuff he says to Dr. Fauci, is that making adjustments to Article 230 would still allow for protections of new and small businesses in the startup sector who are going to come into the social medias, right? So if I only have like 1,000 followers on my podcast, I would be allotted a little bit more protection as to not get canceled and not be financially reliable and still have all the protections of 230, like major ones do now, like Facebook and Twitter and Amazon. But those companies that have been around for a certain number of years, have a certain number of members, are worth a certain dollar amount, and generate a certain amount of revenue would lose those protections because they... When you get like 100 million or a billion members on your social media platform, you lose the ability to govern yourself, period. There's no in between. You can hire all the fact checkers in the world. You can't fact check everything on Twitter. You can't find all the child trafficking groups on Facebook. You know what I'm saying? So they should not have those protections because bad stuff does happen on those sites. But like a little startup messaging app with 100 members, why if one bad person goes in there and drops an N-bomb or an anti-Semitic remark, should you cancel that whole business and not just go after the person who said it? Makes more sense.
I think you really hit home on something there, that they didn't really exist, that it's been an ongoing thing to attack our freedom of speech in the protection of a private business.
Those people are either...
You have all these revelations today, the COVID, old people revelation, this social media 230 revelation. But you know what? I noticed just a few minutes back there, you went ahead and switched back to like your comfort zone of politics and current events and all of that. Well, I'm gonna do the same thing. I'm going to pull back into my comfort zone of the conspiracies.
Keep bringing it.
All right. I want to know, and we talk a lot about the development of your show and how you see the direction moving forward. And you've done an amazing job of making a name for yourself and your show. And in that regard of the current events and political things that occur during the week. But I know that you go really deep in the rabbit holes. And I want to know what some of your favorite ones are and where do you draw the line? Like, are you reptilians? I mean, tell me where your line is. What is there one, if one comes to you that you do not believe, et cetera. And just, yeah, tell me where you are with all that.
I mean, I really don't think I have one anymore. I mean, it's really honest to say that when you look at just all of the things that have been going on just in the last 100 years, and like I said in the beginning of this episode, you know, with the development of technology, there's absolutely no way to tell how long we've been lied to, whether you're talking about like the Freemasons and, you know, all the way back to like Egyptian times, space, time travel, stargates, you know, the 13 families, the moon landing. What can you really say is 100% true or not true anymore?
Right.
So for me, it's like, I just go with an open mind, and I don't want to be sounding too lame, but an open heart.
Aww.
Because I think, well, no, it's that connectivity between your mind and your soul that kind of allows you to have discretion. And, you know, some stuff that people put out there, I don't really have an example off the top of my head, like, but you know, you could look at something and say,
JFK, Princess Diana.
Exactly. So
what do you think? There is a possibility.
Yeah.
Are all these
people alive?
Donald Trump's personal bodyguard just posted a picture, which I'll send to you, of JFK, what he would look like today. Donald Trump's personal bodyguard. I'll send it over to you so you can see. But just wrapping this up here, Roan, I just want to say I'm so happy that you came on my show and we had this one-on-one time. Do you miss your compadres?
Well, we haven't talked about eating people, or neither one of us has really sighed into our mics as Nick would. The colorful insight that both of my co-hosts give, it's so weird. And we tell people and they don't believe us. 2 out of 3 of us have families. All 3 of us work at least 6 days a week in a full-time job that is very immersed. We all have so much stuff going on, but we never get to hang out outside of work. But for some reason, once a week, we meet up in a studio, drink a couple beers, and just break it all down, and it works. And that's kind of like goes into the fact that, yes, I do miss them, because I feel like the group of us in this community of all of us, it's some kind of a higher calling to just be out there and do it the way you feel like it needs to be done right. So, but I did enjoy this one-on-one time, because I don't have to hard stop or segue or really do any paperwork or set up anything to do this show. I could just go on and try to conversate with you on whatever kind of topics you're going to throw at me.
I just have one more.
Send it.
LARP FMK.
Wait, you're going to do a LARP version of FMK?
Yes. Are you ready?
Yes.
I put myself in here. Lala Beans, My Maria, Chonky Pepina. And you can go by our profile pics, obviously, since you may or may not have anything else to go on.
Okay, so yours is what, like a transdimensional light being? Chonky's is a female Pepe, kind of big boobs.
She's thick.
And then My Maria's is Carmen Sandiego.
No, she's not. She is the character from Scarface.
My Maria?
Yeah.
I thought she was Carmen Sandiego in her.
No, she's Elvira. She's Elvira Hancock, the blonde.
Is that character from Scarface and Carmen Sandiego just a fucking template for something that resembles both of those characters? Boom! Okay, here's what we're doing.
Okay.
Fuck Chonk. Marry you. And then for My Maria, it's going to be the 2 astronauts and the globe memes. So you're telling me it was always a LARP, and there's me behind her saying it always was before I splatter her brains on the inside of her moon mask.
Wow, you just did FMK meme style.
There you go.
I might have to just bury this game after that, because I don't think anyone could ever top it after that.
Well, you know who could top it probably was my FMK that you gave me when you came on my show. Why don't you tell your audience who you gave me as a list?
I do believe it was Nancy Pelosi, Big Mike, and
Big Mike
Killary.
Yeah.
And you married Big Mike.
I did. But to save all of humanity, I'm going to say that I killed Hillary Clinton and unfortunately had sex with Nancy Pelosi, who does kind of look like my recently deceased grandma. So, yeah.
That was a tough one.
There was tough. And everybody else had at least one babe. There was one that was like three babes. And
that's not true. I keep them all on the same level. It's not my fault that Nick doesn't think Chrissy Teigen is absolutely disgusting. He chose to marry her.
Well,
why he's a cannibal.
Exactly, because he wants to eat. It was so funny on our podcast yesterday. We were eating like ribs, and Nick, of course, goes down that fucking alley with like, oh man, I bought this new smoker and it's so fucking nice. And you know, he's like, you could fit half a person on there. And I was like, yeah, imagine like for the amount of ribs we just ate. And Nick's like, I didn't say they were pork ribs. And then it kind of got like quiet for a second. We were all just like looking at him. So yeah, he definitely may or may not have fed us people yesterday, because apparently it tastes like pork. So
no comment.
Me either. But no, again, thank you for inviting me to come out. I really appreciate it. And I enjoyed
Thank you. Episode 34 just dropped while we were doing this on Steak for Breakfast podcast. Can be found on all major platforms. Roan, why don't you wrap it up shouting out some of your friends the same way you do on your show?
Obviously, Lala Beams, always a show contributor. I talk a lot with James from We the People Radio, Brenda Memes 3.0, Axia Quinn 5.0. Who else? Oh, I'll give what I mean to say, period in between each word. There you go, our friends of the week.
BB Cakes.
Oh my gosh. Baby Cakes 2.0, I can never forget her. I am doing a meme appreciation episode at some point in May, and I've already gotten Mackenzie Meme, Brenda 3.0, What I Meme to Say, and Baby Cakes 2.0 to come on for a Zoom meme fest. I haven't put it.
When is this meme happening? Do you have a date?
I have the second week and the last week in May, and I just need to get with everybody to see which one works better for them. I think it's going to be the last week in May, like the week after you come on, because the Matrix Assassins reached out today and they were getting that spot right before yours.
Love her. She actually lives right in my hood, so we're IRL friends. She's actually doing an episode tonight with My Maria and Human Vibration on simulation.
Who consequently, Human Vibration is going to be on our show on 420.
There you go.